All right, we are recording. Can I get a check one, check
yes.
two?
Hi, this is Ginger.
Okay.
Check, test.
That's probably fine. Welcome to Super Together. I am James Cochran.
And I'm Ginger Rothis.
And we're both feeling kind of...
Well, your word was sh**.
Yeah, but now I have to bleep that out.
Oh.
We don't want to have to put an explicit tag.
Okay, start over.
No. We'll leave that in. I'll just throw in a bleep. You know, So we record these episodes the day before they come out, generally speaking. Sometimes we get ahead of ourselves. But generally, the episodes come out on Friday. We record them on Thursday. So today is Thursday, the 24th of September. Let's see. Friday evening was the passing of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And then yesterday we kind of became made aware of the charges that would or would not be brought against those involved in the murder of Breonna Taylor, an EMT based in Louisville who was shot to death in her bed at home for no reason other than mistaken identity. The charges that were brought against one of the people involved was a Class D felony, wanton endangerment, which is the same kind of felony as shoplifting and eavesdropping, I saw. Mm. And most of that has to do with the fact that because of that officer's actions, that other people were put into danger. So nothing in terms of actually bringing justice for the death of Breonna Taylor. So pretty disappointing in terms of just the way that, we spent a lot of time over the summer doing episodes on the Black Lives Matter movement, what it looks like to be allies, you know, how do we move through the world in the recognition that this country is a different place for Black people, Indigenous people, people of color, and just holding that, it would feel disingenuous to launch into a fun-filled episode of talking about personality traits. So,
yeah.
I think we just wanted to name that. Anything you'd want to add in terms of how you were thinking or feeling about any of this?
That heavy, really heavy feeling came back, and I think that it's, you know, I was, as much as I don't want to live with a heavy feeling, I think it's good that we are feeling heavy with this. I think it's good that it's affecting us deeply because we've got to wake up and we have to be part of, you know, the change we want to see in the world. And the vitriol of this upcoming election is just so hard to hang on to a sense of faith, a sense of hope, a sense of justice when we continue to get evidence that those things might just be ideals because we don't see it played out in front of us often enough. I'm heavy again too. And the lies, the inconsistencies, the corruption, and coming from a biblical perspective, the empire and the institutions, power over good people. Yeah. And it's hard. I mean, for thousands of years, we have watched this as human beings. And as much as I think we're making, I hope, some progress on the arc toward love, it's slow. Yeah. And there are lives lost in trying to grow humanity towards love. And it's a painful time to be a human.
Yeah. There's a tune by Waterdeep called 18 Bullet Holes, oddly enough. But the chorus goes, "Oh God, it hurts so bad to love anybody down here."
Wow.
And that, I think, encapsulates how I'm feeling. You know, I live my life in a way that tries to orient toward not having enemies. You know, we have this podcast on relationships, not just for coupled relationships, but also thinking about the way that we relate as people to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that to do that well, we have to get rid of notions of tribalism and othering and those types of things. But loving somebody while holding on to the recognition that we are deeply, deeply different in terms of the things that we value, the things that we are willing to stand up for. It's hard, mm-hmm. and it's painful. But I think, as you said, that pain is necessary.
Yeah.
We're going to, you know, we'll continue to sit with that. And mm-hmm. We may need to check in regularly as we move through this election season, just, mm-hmm. You know, because we're called to be in relationship with each other. And I say we're called, I mean, that has some spiritual mm-hmm. Notion to it. But from an evolutionary psychology standpoint, like mm-hmm. we formed in these, you know, communal spaces of 50 to 100 people. And, you know, we learned how to be a species. We learned how to be ourselves socially in the context of other people. So I don't want us to give up on each other, even though that is a very tempting thing to do in a moment like this. But I don't know. So that's where we are today. So if there's a little less zing or pep in our voices, that's what you can attribute that to. We'll do our best to bring justice, that pun was not intended, to the topic at hand, which we're talking about personality. So there's psychologists for a long time have looked at five big personality traits that kind of define like the stable patterns that we can use to predict how a person thinks, feels, behaves, etc. You could go so far as to argue that the entire field of psychology is based on the idea that personality is stable over time. If people were utterly unpredictable, there would be no value mm-hmm. to, you know, trying to help a person navigate who they are as people. So today we're talking about conscientiousness, which, as I was typing it into the feed, is a doozy of a word. Because it doesn't, like, if you were going to spell conscientiousness, if, like, the author of the dictionary called you and said, hey, Ginger, you get to spell conscientiousness the way you want to spell it, how would you spell it?
It's not the way it's spelled. I know. I don't know how I would, but I always have to stop of like the word conscious, conscientious. It's like conscience, tientience. That's how I remember it.
I would spell it maybe C-O-N-S-H-E.
Yes. Okay.
N-T-O-U-S-N-E-S-S. And so there's some of that is similar, but it's
the science
conscient
part.
And then there's a T, there's definitely a T,
and the conscientious,
conscientiousness. So it's a doozy. What it means in the context of understanding our personalities, I think it would be better described as like organized. And there are some personality tests and profiles that will use that word instead of conscientiousness. Mm-hmm. So they will say, like, for example, premarital classes that we do that use Prepare Enrich as its formula uses what's called the SCOPE personality profile, and the O in there stands for organized. Mm. And so really we're looking at the tendency of people to be organized and dependable. Maybe we can position ourselves right off the bat. Where do you find yourself falling on this spectrum?
Probably more toward the organized, mm-hmm. kind of efficient. That's my goal anyway. I judge myself if I'm not efficient and organized. So that must mean that's important to me. Sure. I think I have to work to be more easygoing, the other end of the spectrum. For me, conscientiousness is a lot like mindfulness in my own life. That's kind of how I think about it. Am I paying attention? Am I, you know, am I aware of things? So whether that's time management or achieving things or being conscientious of the people around me and their feelings, you know, that's kind of mindfulness to me. And I guess when I hear the word organized, I think literally organized. Mm. Like, is my purse organized? Is my car organized? Is my life? Yeah, no. Yeah. I struggle with those things. I think I go in waves of I achieve a feeling of being organized, and I find calm in that. It's usually peaceful when I can accomplish that, but I don't maintain it. And so then I'm back to it degrading and then coming back to it. Yeah. So as far as literal organization, that is a goal, but something that I'm not sure I make it a priority. But I think of it more as like my creativity is at the expense of organization sometimes.
Okay. Say more about that.
So to me, this like free flowing way of living, going with the flow, is when I feel the most creative. When I'm trying to control things, literally my things, mm-hmm. like stay organized, organize my time, organize my thoughts, I tend to get more rigid and less creative. Mm-hmm. I just notice. So I have this, I guess it's a yin and a yang, or a love hate with the goal of being organized, because I also know it takes a lot of time and kind of zaps my just pleasure for life.
Yeah, yeah. So I honestly do not know where I am. I'm probably right in the middle. Mm-hmm. I lived most of my youth in utter disorganization. I don't think that there is a single person who before the age of 18 would have identified me as organized. I had no interest in coming up with or maintaining systems of how to do things. And honestly, like, I have fun solving the problems of organization, but I have zero interest in maintaining them. Yes. So like, I can organize my desk. Yes. I can organize my tool bench in my garage. I can get the house clean. But like, where I have, I think, the most difficulty is in like having the time, energy, patience, yeah, to say, oh, well, I'm going to keep this organized. And part of that may be just that I'm solving it incorrectly, or at least that's what Lindsay thinks. Lindsay thinks that it needs to be organized properly so that it won't become disorganized.
That's a good
point. And I think that there is truth to that. Yes. So, for example, she, over the course of this summer, really just from the ground up reorganized our pantry where all of our, you know, mm-hmm. non-refrigerated foods are stored. Mm-hmm. And did so in a way where there is not one thing out of place. And there's no space for things to be out of place. So there's not just, and that's probably how a pantry should be, because there's not like workspace inside of a pantry. So it's the type of thing where it has stayed organized through the course of that process, you know, months now, mm-hmm. having it been originally organized, because there isn't really room to do it wrong.
Yes.
If there is room for something to become disorganized, it's easy for me to become disorganized. What I think is interesting, as I sort of qualified this idea by saying that prior to age 18, I don't think anybody would describe me as organized. Now in my adult life, I think that there are a lot of people who would describe me as organized, mm-hmm. but I don't ever really feel all that organized. So for example, Ginger, this is not meant to give you any shame at all, but for this podcast, who does all of the things that would fall into the category of organization?
For all of the things James does.
And now, so obviously your contribution to the recording itself is, irreplaceable, but, I think that because I, you know, set
Absolutely.
Those kinds of things up, people would say, oh, well, James is really organized.
Totally.
You know, and there's other projects that I have a similar relationship to. So I think where I am most interested in unpacking this idea of organization has to do with the difference between, kind of almost like we talked about last week, the capacity to be organized and the ways in which organization, dependability, being available, accessible, those types of things, feed our energy, feed our souls, or take things away from our souls. Because I certainly will acknowledge that I have the capacity to be organized. But what I would say is that, you know, I will, in all things, really gladly defer projects. What's the word I'm looking for? Delegate. Those types of tasks, because I don't enjoy doing them very much at all. Or find ways to streamline them. So I think that just like we talked about last week with introversion and extroversion, I consider myself an introvert, but I have the capacity to be social, to be up in front of people, to do those types of things. But it takes something, you know, from me and that type of thing. So I don't know if you see that play out in your relationship with Rob at all.
Yeah, yeah. So first, to a nod to your organization skills on this podcast would not happen if it weren't for James, because all I'm interested in doing is showing up, talking, and leaving. And I think that comes to what I value, right? So I guess if you said, Ginger, I'm done organizing this and editing and posting, it's on you, it probably wouldn't happen, honestly, because I those are not my gifts. I tend to, I'm learning as a businesswoman now, again, but entrepreneur more, is that I have to outsource a lot of the detail type things because I don't value it. And it's the stuff that falls through the cracks and then people are hurt that I didn't respond to an email or, you know, so I have found my attention to detail is not as valuable to me, or attention to detail I don't value as much as in the moment with somebody, connecting with them and in conversation. Love that. But everything else on the periphery, I struggle with. So I have to work at that. I would say if somebody walked into your office and my office, they would say you are much more organized than I am. Like I look around your office, we are in it now, and I see things in their place. I see really good systems actually. And mine looks like a bomb. I call it creativity, but a bomb of something went off on my desk. I have like probably 50 books right now and pages of ideas and things on whiteboards. And but that's so I guess in this you know, spectrum, I am probably more in the middle like you, but not being organized is an area of shame for me in my life. I give myself this message of judgment that you're a mess. If you were organized, you'd get more done. Or if you were organized, you wouldn't lose your keys. You know, those are often kind of my inner critic messages. So as I've learned to kind of manage my inner critic, I have also learned to know that I have to make that a priority sometimes, and stop and allow, you know, time in my calendar to organize things and make a plan, put things where they belong. I love what you're saying about Lindsay's pantry, because she's right. If you, if your system works well enough, then there's not room for error. And I, you know, I have learned that with organizing my home and my life. I would say Rob is much more organized than I am. If you sat the two of us, you know, down, he would be the detail oriented one, and I would be the kind of big picture social extrovert. Back to last episode. And that's where my energy comes from. He's more of an accountant. He's the CFO of his business and the operations person in his business. He makes the details happen, whereas his brother is the salesperson and wired that way. So I think that, our home reflects that. But I would also say disorganization bothers me in the home way more than it bothers him. So it's interesting because that's that judgment thing, right? Of like, I should have an organized home, but I don't value it enough to do it.
Well, I almost would want to unpack that, and the therapist in me came up with so many different questions that I want to ask you through that, but I'll try to limit it to things that don't plumb the depths of your soul.
Right. That's okay.
I think that there is a cultural message. We talked at length last week about how our culture values extroversion far more than it values introversion. And I think that our culture values organization far more than it values disorganization. I think that there are certainly some spaces where there are exceptions to that. But I think about, for example, like the absent-minded genius, or, you know, that sort of eccentric professor.
Stereotype. That. Let's go with that. I want to be that.
So certainly I think that there are ways in which we say like, oh, like let's give that like genius person a pass for being disorganized because their skills lie in their vision and then their capacity for inventiveness. But by and large, like you think about a job interview that you go to, you're very much going to be judged based on your organization. Are, you know, do you look nice and neat? Are you there on time? Do you have, you know, resumes ready to hand out? Is everything sort of nice and neat and orderly? And those are the types of things that I think that's where those shame messages come from, where we say, and to varying degrees, I think that if we have families that, you know, pride themselves on organization, you know, that's going to influence us a lot more versus families that don't see that as much of a priority. And I think that that shows up in our lives in different ways. So there are spaces in our home where I am far less comfortable with disorganization than others. And it has to do with the spaces in which I'm like trying to relax, like mm-hmm. workspaces, they don't bother me as mm-hmm. much if they're kind of a mess. It's because yes. it's like I'm in the middle of something. I'm not necessarily trying to rest, but if I'm trying to rest and everything is just like all over the place,
yes.
I have a harder time with that. And that's probably a result of the home that I grew up in, you know, they were the spaces where we entertained and we wanted to make look presentable and those types of things. So when it was like, hey, people are coming over, clean the house. What they didn't yes. mean go clean the garage
right.
and get everything picked up in there, or, you know,
the public spaces.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so I think that certainly shapes a lot of how we approach this. One of the ways that I think organization is most disruptive in my life, with my relationship in particular, is in the ways that we plan our lives, when we organize our routines and schedules. Mm-hmm. So I would say, Lindsay and I have been married for over 10 years. The single most consistent point of conflict is family meetings, where we sit down and like solve problems, organize our week, decide when we're eating what, and all those types of things. There is something inside of me that transforms into Mr. Hyde. Like, normally I'm very mild-mannered Dr. Jekyll kind of person at home, but I become a monster of myself when it's like, now sit down and for 10 minutes, like, use the organizational part of your brain. I don't know what it is. I don't want to just sort of pass this off as this sort of male, like, well, it's just the way I'm wired kind of thing. Like, I would love to get to the bottom of why I am so resistant to that. But that, I think, is when we and our partners are very far apart on this spectrum. So I think it matters less maybe where you are and more how you relate to where your partner is. I think that most of the challenge in overcoming that gap has to do with, okay, how comfortable can I allow myself being where they are on the spectrum? So for Lindsay, it's how do I keep him in the family meeting space for as short a time as possible, ask as little of him as possible. And for me, it's how can I live into that family meeting space with as much grace, as much mm-hmm. patience, as much time as I can. And both of us are trying to like stretch ourselves toward the middle. And I think the reason why it's still a point of conflict is, even though we're both sort of reaching toward each other, she's reaching into the space of disorganization, I'm reaching into the space of organization, we're still a little bit far apart. She wants me to be more organized than I am. I would love her to be more comfortable being less organized than she is. Mm-hmm. And I think that is an ongoing process where we're open and honest with each other about what it's going to take in those. We just had, I think, a breakthrough a week or two ago where we realized that scheduling, so actually like looking at our week and breaking down the 168 hours in the space of a week, that bothers me less than that plus like creative problem solving. Like, you know, what are we going to do for Cora's birthday? And how are we going to figure out family pictures for this fall and those types of things? And I think that those maybe fall into a space of organization. But one of the things that I have told her is like, I'm happy to solve those problems a lot of the time. But for some reason, the space of a family meeting, like it stretches my brain to a place where I can't get there. So we're trying a new approach where we say, okay, well, through the course of the week, we'll have small problem solving meetings, and then we'll have a once a week scheduling meeting. So we're still trying to find the right path forward. And I think we're making some progress, but I think it all goes with saying like, how do I stretch myself into your space? How can you stretch yourself into mine?
I get what you're saying on the kind of short-term planning versus long-term planning. Mm-hmm. So that short-term 168 hours this week, we do that on Sundays too, of like, what's the week look like? Mm-hmm. Who's picking up, who's taking, who has an activity? And that is less overwhelming to me than those quarterly events, kind mm-hmm. of where we need to be thinking forward. And I think it's just the fear of commitment, the fear mm-hmm. of making decisions. After you've done the 168 hours, I think those kind of planning events just seem overwhelming. I do that too.
Yeah.
And if somebody says like, I also react sometimes if somebody says, what are we doing for the birthday? I react of, this is not my responsibility, you know?
Sure, sure.
This is not 100% my responsibility. And Rob will be like, no, I meant we. I said we, you know? So we have that same kind of thing too. And I think it just triggers something in me that I probably feel responsible for everybody's happiness, which is a whole other episode. And so I have to release that of, wait, he didn't say, what are you doing? He said, what are we doing? And we're working, we're trying to be a team here. But sometimes when I'm in that overwhelm, those are the kinds of reactions I have too.
Yeah.
So yeah, that makes sense to me. I think that one of the...
That was my bike helmet. It fell. Don't worry.
If you were organized, that wouldn't happen.
Well, that is the same place I put my bike helmet every time I come in.
I'm kidding. It was resting on the back of his chair. I saw your bike out there. It's super cool.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lance, for letting me.
I remember that episode too.
Financial advisor.
That came up in the Lance interview. Yeah. I back to what you were saying about certain spaces. I do that resonates deeply with me. Like the mail desk where we dump mail can be a mess and not bother me so much. But if the family room has, you know, books and shoes and socks and cushions and everything thrown around, when I want to unplug, then I feel this antsy, like, you know, I don't know that it's even, I don't even articulate it, but it's just this like, oh, everything's a mess. Mm. So it is kind of subjective to, you know, how we use a space, how I'm feeling at the time. I mean, there are times where I can just roll with it much easier. But I think some of it tends for me, the resistance to organization, I think is my same resistance to control maybe. Mm. And, you know, there may be something deeper there too of like, I want to be able to live with freedom and I want to be able to be easygoing. And so I think I'm always kind of in that tension of the society's expectations, right? You scroll through Instagram and Pinterest and I follow a bunch of people who have very great organizing skills. And so I see that and it triggers in me a feeling of lack or, you know, I missed an opportunity. But when I really think about, do you really want to live that way? I guess I kind of do, but not enough such that I invest in the containers and do
right.
the work.
Right. I think that there is a, there's this gap between, I think most of us would say, you know, if I could snap my fingers and your life was like 90% more streamlined, most people would say, great, do it. Like that sounds awesome. But it takes a certain kind of energy, and this is where the personality dimension comes in, that not all of us have in abundance.
Yes.
You know, if I said, okay, Lindsay, the girls are at your mom's for a week and you have a budget of $5,000, organize our house.
Yes, that's a dream.
Here, there's a dumpster in the driveway, you know, just go bananas. Yeah, she would summon the energy to make that happen.
Yes.
If she said the same thing to me, I would be devastated. I'd be like, why can't we go on a vacation to Aruba or something? You know, like, yes. Like let's find a better way to use this time.
Yes.
And that, I think, is the thing that we have to reckon with in saying we, just like every difference that arises in the space of a relationship, we have to have a conversation that allows us to meet sort of both parties'
yes.
needs. So there's a sort of minimum threshold that we have to rise to where, for example, my wife cannot feel okay if she doesn't have some sense of what her week is going to look like. If we skip the family meeting because of circumstances, because of neglect or whatever, she has a worse week. Just bottom line, she has a worse week. Now, I love and care about my wife. If my wife has a bad week, my week's going to suffer. But even if my week didn't suffer, I don't want her week to be worse. And so that is where we say, okay, well, I need to create space. I need to be intentional about participating in this because it matters to you. We haven't had an episode on sex. I think we're,
yeah.
I don't know. We'll have to do it at some point. But one of the sort of prevailing models in how we understand sexuality is the dual control model, which looks at both the things that stimulate arousal, but also the things that weaken arousal or dampen arousal. So basically there's the gas and there's the brakes. And as a society and as a culture, like even as a therapist, when people come into my office and they're describing some kind of sexual dissatisfaction, usually they're saying, yeah, we're trying to find ways to spice things up. So they're saying, we want to try to find a way to put our foot on the gas pedal. And what I will routinely tell them is, in all likelihood, the problem is the brakes. Mm-hmm. The problem is there are too many things in your life that are making it harder for you to feel comfortable and okay. And I think that that is what happens when we have these unreconciled personality differences. When one partner says, I don't care to be bothered by any of this organizational stuff. Well, for the other partner, those are obstacles to them feeling like they have the ability to be connected and intimate with their partner. Mm-hmm. So if I just let the house fall into disrepair, mm-hmm. if I don't sort of do my part to keep the house organized or to keep our week planned or to figure out what we're going to do with our meals or, navigate the various responsibilities that we have in and outside of the house, Lindsay is going to feel more stressed, more overwhelmed, less connected to me. Mm-hmm. And I think we can apply that to every single one of these personality dimensions, but this is a place where it shows up, I think, in a really salient way. And so if instead we say, well, no, I don't feel like I'm a particularly organizationally driven person, but I want to be connected to my wife. Mm-hmm. So I have to figure out, well, what role do I need to play in doing that? And I think what I have found over the past, 17 years of being with Lindsay is that she has very much shaped how I have approached the world in terms of organization. Mm-hmm. She helps me find ways to make organization easier, which makes it easier for me to be organized. Mm-hmm. She will put the mail that I need to go mm-hmm. through in a space where I'm going to see it. I need to be able to look through it. One of the things that I find that I thrive on is lists, because I am not the type of person that will keep in my own brain a list of all the things that are wrong with our house. But if I asked Lindsay, I said, okay, name everything that's out of place right now, she'd be able to tell you just yes. off the top of her head. Yes. So for her, I say, okay, make me a list mm-hmm. so that I can participate in helping this process. Mm-hmm. So it's figuring out ways that I can introduce your need for organization into my life, which is not naturally honed toward organization, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And I think that, you just reminded me of kind of my view of marriage is, or my view of partnership rather, is that we have agreed to do life together to help each other. Mm. And we have agreed to want the best for the other person. That's what a partnership is. And so I think looking for ways of what is important to my partner, what do they value, and how can I help them feel better by, doing the things that they value. Mm-hmm. I think for me, one of the things I've noticed is as I have people in my life that are good at things that I'm not good at, like you doing the podcast, and I have a friend, Lee Marie, who is so organized and administratively gifted, and she will tell me often, like, this is the person you need, remember mm-hmm. to call this person or check on them, or this is where you need to be this weekend. And I love it because it's not insulting. It's not, mm-hmm. It's absolutely helpful. And so, I thank her often because I really would, I need her. Mm-hmm. And she loves doing it. That's, she's wired that way. So I think we also have to appreciate and recognize the people that help us do the things that we don't value and help us be better. I mean, that's kind of my definition of a partnership or a friendship, is that I want to help you. Mm-hmm. But it has to be mutually beneficial too. Right? It's not just one of us giving to the other.
Yeah.
But I think this idea of how you feel connected with somebody is a result of, do I feel like they care about what I value? Do I mm-hmm. feel like they are helping me get through life? And if the answer to that is no, then that is certainly a break to intimacy and connectedness.
Yeah. It strikes me as I kind of taking the long view of how I've related to organization in my life. At my wedding, and this was, after I had graduated from college, and Lindsay and I had been together for a number of years, 4, 5, 6 years. And my stepdad, in the, speech that he gave at our wedding reception, basically acknowledged that, like, whatever success I had academically can be directly attributed to Lindsay, mm-hmm. That her capacity to inspire mm-hmm. organization in me, mm-hmm. Which sort of helped match what is probably a natural intellect, which sounds like a braggadocious thing to say, but like I had the ability to do okay in school, but not the organizational drive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But her being a complement to the things that I am naturally good at and sort of guiding that in me, but also me seeing like, wow, I see the ways in which this like allows you to do a lot and to be a lot and achieve a lot. And that, I think, level of gratitude is really what brings out the best in us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that if we allow for these personality differences to not be sort of, you know, the banes of our existence. Is banes the plural for bane? I don't know.
Just bane of our existence. I don't know.
The many bane. Yeah,
it's good. Keep going.
The things that make us sad-faced.
Yes. sad emoji.
Yeah. Then I think that we have a more robust sense of who we can be, what we are capable of, and again, how we can kind of get the most out of our relationship.
Yeah. I mean, I think this, you know, with all of the five personality traits, it's just always interesting to check back in, I think, with mm-hmm. our partners. And not that we need the formula in front of us to remember, you know, a system, but more just, am I being mindful of what helps them? And that's back to the conscientiousness. You know, am I tuning into my partner? Am I aware of their tendencies and their values and what's important to them? And then are they doing that for me? And if not, then that's a conversation that needs to be had of, I feel like this is all on me and I need your help. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Rob and I have this very 50-50 approach to the household and children. I think, you know, and I know that's not common, but I think we got married older. We both had lived independently. You know, we had managed things on our own enough that when we came together, we were both very capable of running a household.
Yeah.
And I think that helped establish this equality. And his attitude toward women is certainly equality. So he would never expect things to be on my plate because I'm a woman.
Right.
But there is very much this system that works of, if there are dishes on the counter, whoever has time and capacity and sees it will deal with mm-hmm. it. And if there is laundry piling up, whoever sees it will deal with it. And same with mail. I mean, there are times where it's disorganized enough that I will tackle it. And there are times where he walks by and sees it and mm-hmm. he will tackle it. But I think we do need to be intentional about checking in. Like, does this mm-hmm. still feel balanced to you? Or does it feel like you're doing it all? Because, you know, I may be assuming 50-50 and he says, no, it's really 80-20. Mm-hmm. But those are the conversations that I think we constantly have to have as a couple. And he will say sometimes to me, like, don't be so hard on yourself about this. Mm. It is fine. You are working a ton. If the pantry is a mess, it's a mess. Who cares? Sure, Shut the door. You know, so we have these conversations often where he will be the more easygoing one, even though he's detail oriented. And we have to help each other with that, I think.
Right, right. And maybe helping each other is the, you know, the final word in how we, you know, navigate that process. And that, you got anything else on?
No.
Personally?
That's okay. Good.
Well, I'm James Cochran, and you can find information about my practice at talkingwithjames.com. And you can check out my dope new course for couples at convergecourses.com. It's super awesome. And through the 30th, you can get 25% off if you use the code LAUNCHPARTY there. That will make my advertising consultant really happy. That I said
good.
To you to do that thing. Ginger.
Awesome.
Who are
yes.
You?
you can find me at compassionfix.com, and you can join the Compassion Fix community if you want to have more deep conversations like this. And I will also circle back to the beginning where we were talking about kind of the despair and the heaviness in the air and the injustices in the world. I'm teaching a class on Psalms right now, and we're really addressing these things, and we're learning to lament and to complain, but in faith, to have a conversation with God about our disappointments and our questions. And you can find that on my website at CompassionFix.com under classes. It's open right now because I'm doing it live every Thursday morning. So feel free, if that would feed your soul, those video replays are available to you because it's helping me in this season to have permission to question and lament and wrestle with some of the big questions.
Yeah, absolutely. take care of each other, be kind to each other, give each other lots of grace. And as we say every week,
be well.